well, Mr. Walsh, we meet at last.
Combsfield, I knew you were behind this podcast.
Indeed I am, Mr. Walsh. And not just this podcast, I'm afraid. Think back to the last 20 years of your life. I have been the architect of all your pain.
Combsfield, you will not get away with this.
I don't intend to get away with anything, Mr. Walsh. Oh, did you mean this podcast? Yes, I have placed a rather ingenious device of my own making in this recording. It will brainwash every listener into liking, subscribing, and leaving a 5-star rating for this podcast. And there's quite nothing that you can do to stop me, I'm afraid.
You maniac! This podcast? Do you really expect me to talk?
No, Mr. Walsh, I expect you to die.
Welcome back to the Sucks Podcast.
I'm your host, Brad.
And I am your host, Dave.
And with us, as always, is producer Joe. Good morning.
Hey, you guys. How's it going?
Hang on. Good. Always. He wasn't here for 2 weeks, Brad.
Well, what are you going to do? It's in the script. That's what, I do.
It's true.
And speaking of a script, this is, of course, a podcast where we talk about design, intentional and otherwise, and all the ways that UX...
User experience design...
impact us every day. We are lovers.
Sweet syrupy lovers.
Not experts of UX, but we started this podcast as a way to talk about why things were made the way that they are and where those design decisions might have gone off the rails. It's good to see you, Joe. How are you doing? How's your travels?
It's good to be back, guys. It's been a busy couple weeks. It's fun when I can listen to you guys as just like a fan of the show. Like, I look forward to hearing you guys talk, but it's also good to be back.
Yeah, well, it's good to have you back.
Yes, sir.
We got a big episode, so we're going to keep on trucking. As you all know, we have retired the news from our format, so we will not be talking about the news today. We will definitely not be talking about TikTok subscriptions, about how people are still underestimating what TikTok is. We won't go into, you know, for example, in 2021, Netflix, you know, by comparison, had 9.6.
Oh, Brad, I'm sorry. Can I? Sure. I got to do something really fast. Yeah. I got to blow my nose real fast.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now that we did that, I'm sorry. were you saying something about Netflix?
I mean, we're not going to go into the fact that Netflix had 9.6 trillion minutes of content consumed last year. 9.6 trillion sounds like a lot, right? Well, yeah. TikTok had 22.6 trillion minutes of content consumed, making it by far the largest platform for the largest entertainment platform in the world by wide degree. So we're not going to go into that today.
Not at all. I think it's good that we don't go into it because we don't have time. We don't have time. Yeah. We got a big episode. When do we have a little episode? One time I want you to go, hey guys, we got a tiny episode today.
I feel like when it's just you and I don't say that it's a big episode because it's a tiny episode.
But it's the longest episodes to edit. I swear to God, we talk for 2 hours, Brad. How do we talk for 2 hours with no guest?
I don't know. We don't even like each other that much.
I don't know.
So anyway, we're going to take a break. We'll pay some bills. We'll come back and we'll talk about, I don't know, James fucking Bond. Sound like a plan?
There it is.
And we are back with our main topic, the UX of James Bond. I think all of us are Bond fans here, yeah?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
All right, let's intro our guest. I'm really, really excited. Ethan Gray is our first ever returning guest to the Sucks Podcast. Woo-hoo. Quite an honor, Ethan. I hope that, you know, you're going to, you know, appreciate the plaque that you're going to get in the mail sometime soon.
I was going to say, I think we have a blazer for that, like SNL, like a two-timers club.
No, that's for five-timers, so we're going to need to, you know, keep going on that. Ethan Gray is Director of Subscriptions and Monetization Product for Warner Brothers Discovery. Ethan and I worked at Disney for many years, and he's a great guy, and we're so excited to have you back on the pod. Ethan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, guys. Happy to be here.
Ethan, this was your idea for an episode, so we got to give you full credit and full marks for this, and I'm really, really excited about it. So can you start by telling us your general background with James Bond as a fan?
Yeah, so I have a funny, I guess it's hopefully it's a funny story for you guys, but the first James Bond movie I ever saw was A View to a Kill. which I think if we're all about the same age, so that might be the first movie that we all saw, maybe in general. But I saw it in a movie theater in Dublin in the summer of 85. So my mom carted me off to Ireland for 3 weeks during the summer. Nice. And I was bored through most of it. And then, you know, I was kind of fussy as a 7 year old. And so she's like, well, let's just go see this. It's an American movie. And the first time I saw it, I was like, oh my God, this is the best thing I've ever seen in my entire life. And of course it is, right? It's written for 7 year olds. And basically once you get to be 8 or 9, it becomes boring. And then my second movie after was Moonraker.
Okay.
Which, I mean, you can tell that they're kind of in the same genre, yeah. right? They're like, oh, that's not too far of a leap. It's a Star Wars ripoff. So,
right.
So yeah, I was a fan forever after that.
Yeah. Right on. Sure. A View to a Kill was the first James Bond movie I saw in the theaters as well. And I think I'm a couple years younger than you. And, you know, it was incredible. I think I would have been like 5. You said you were 7. incredible. Absolutely incredible. I still have a really soft spot for that movie. Joseph, how about you? What's your background with James Bond?
Well, it's actually interesting because I remember as a kid, TV guides always advertising, like, you know, they were going to be on HBO. And so it was always like this like mysterious thing that I never really got into. Like I didn't have a dad that I used to watch movies with. So I kind of came to it late. I think there was like a big gap between like, what was it? License to Kill and GoldenEye. GoldenEye came out right when I was getting into college. The mm-hmm. game came out. You know, I was hooked. We played that game for years.
And when you say we, you're talking literally we, like you and I.
Yes. Yeah, you and I, and you know, 4 years in college prior. I mean, it's amazing that the game was literally in our lives for like 5 years.
Yeah.
But here's the interesting part. So I became a real fan then, you know, but think about it. The Brosnan films and the Craig films, that's almost 27 years out of 45 years of my life. So yeah. Has it been a big part of my life? Half my life has been just those two Bonds. And then, of course, I've gone back and watched the Connery ones now, and I still have some of the more films and Lazenby's to catch up with. But that's so crazy to think, like feels like that wasn't so long ago. That's half our life ago.
Right on. How about you, Dave?
Well, you guys, I've seen every single one of these films, right?
Every single one.
Every single bleeping one. And I'll tell you why. But the thing is, you think I'd be an asset to this episode. The problem is I've got a regarding Henry brain. Uh-huh. So I remember none of it. So my dad was a huge fan, rest his soul. So we every year we'd get him a new VHS tape, right, for Christmas, or a couple of them. And I don't know if he appreciated it. It seemed like he did. Or if it's like one of those things where like you say you like cats and suddenly you got a cat mug, you got cat socks, you got a cat hat. You know, I don't know. We just always got him James Bond stuff. And then naturally, we'd always watch them. So yeah. I grew up more like, of course, I saw View to a Kill. That was one of the – I don't know if I saw it in the theater or not. But yeah. I had already been schooled in the classics. You know what I mean? So I grew up on the Sean Connery stuff, you know, more so than the current stuff. So I didn't get back into it until the Daniel Craig series. So, I mean, I watched them all. But that's when I really got back into it, was the Craig stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Because it's current, but yeah, sure. No, I'll see. Maybe the brain will get dusted off. You know, maybe I'll see the Big Dripper. it's he got it. Ethan got it.
I got it.
It's a line from regarding him.
Okay. Well, yeah, A View to a Kill I saw in a movie theater. I was 5 years old. I remember the specific theater in Middletown, Ohio. Big shout out for Middletown, Ohio. So yeah. And then after that, we had the Sean Connerys, all of them on VHS, because back in the day, they had released them in sets. Sort of they had re-released the Sean Connerys as one set that you could buy. And then the Roger Moores, I think, were divided into a few. So I watched them after A View to a Kill in order, which is cool. So I started with Dr. No, and then From Russia with Love, and then Goldfinger, or vice versa. I can't remember. But yeah, I've seen them all. I freaking love these movies. I had the great pleasure of spending some time with Sean Connery in a previous life, and I have to tell this story. I don't know if it's interesting or not.
The name dropper. Come on. Okay. You didn't meet Sean Connery. Get out of here, Brad.
I had a series of long-form discussions over the phone with Sean Connery in approximately 2005-06. He was quite old at the time, you know. Now he's I don't know if he's dead, so I don't know if
he has passed. He has passed. Older. Yes.
Now.
Yeah. He's older, or he's aged older out of aging. Colder.
Yeah. He's set to be de-aged on the silver screen.
Okay, so I had this boss big time, you know, movie producer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, he and Sean Connery were good friends. Sean got sick. He developed cancer. And my boss is a germaphobe, was a germaphobe at the time. And he was really creeped out about talking to sick people. So I don't want to mention his name because it's pretty lame.
I know his name.
Yeah. Pretty lame. So he really wanted to make sure that his friend was okay and to, like, you know, put in the time with him, but he didn't want to talk to him personally. So he had me call him and check in on him every 3 days for a period of weeks. And it was pretty wild. And my take on Sean was that he was just this old, lonely guy. He seemed to be like pseudo estranged from his family. Like, he didn't have a lot of familial support other than his wife. So he really didn't have a lot of support. He told me a story once where he had cancer surgery in New York City and walked home some like 20 blocks or something after his surgery.
He wanted to, or he didn't have anybody to pick him up?
Unclear. You would think that there are solutions to these problems, but
oh my gosh.
It very much read like, you know, his family didn't, you know, just wasn't involved.
Can we jump back to, I don't know if you're done here. If you you aren't, I'm sorry.
Totally fine.
Can we jump back to your boss's germophobia? And does he know
extended
that you
to over the phone?
No. I'll even allow that, Brad. Even allow that. Okay. Let's assume cooties can travel over the airwaves. Mm-hmm. But does he know cancer is not contagious? What?
He's a quirky guy. Quirky guy. So
don't you miss Hollywood?
Here's how the story ends. So over a period of a few weeks, we had these discussions, and sometimes they would be 20 minutes, and sometimes they would be an hour and a half. And, you know, we talk about tennis, we talk about art and stuff like that. I never ask him any Bond questions because I was too afraid. But eventually, you know, he started asking about my boss. Like, he started realizing that why was he talking to me?
Right.
He started realizing that he was never going to get on the phone with his actual friend, my boss, and being used as a proxy. And after a period of, you know, a few weeks, he just wasn't that interested in talking to me anymore. Which, by the way, you know, I was pretty young. I was in my, you know, early 20s at the time. Yeah, I didn't have a whole lot to say. I was not an interesting chat companion for Sean Connery. So I totally get it. But anyway, that's my Sean Connery story.
Brad, you painted a really sad picture right now for me. I'm picturing Sean Connery.
Yeah.
Cancer treatment, telling you a proxy for a friend that he has no one. This is, I need a moment here. This is tragic.
I wish that there was a happier version of the story that I could tell you, but that's what it was. And it was kind of tragic.
Wow. That's sad. Well,
he came across as like a lonely old man, you know?
So that's our episode.
On that note, let's get into the fun stuff. Let's jump into James Bond. Again, Bond has always been a part of my life. I am so excited to talk about this. So, Dave, why don't you key us up here?
All right, let's get into this. We are going to look at all of James Bond's gadgets through the lens of, is this good UX?
We're going to look at the UX of James Bond gadgets across a few categories, and I think that we should look at this through the lens of UX, which I view like this. Are these gadgets effective at solving a problem? And does that effectiveness justify design, time, cost, resources, etc.? Ethan, how do you think about this in relating to UX?
Yeah, so I wanted to do this episode. This was, as Brad said, this was my recommendation. I have thought about this far too much over my life. Whereas Dave may have it regarding Henry Brain, I am the opposite. I am a useless compendium of pop culture knowledge that I cannot escape. So I think about this as kind of like, what is going to be effective, but then also too, as I suggested, like, what does it take to actually make the thing? Like, you know, what is Q's mindset? Like, what's Bond's mindset when he's going, he's like, well, I need this thing. And, you know, anticipating his needs. So when I watch the movies, that's what I do. I go, wow, that was cool. But like, what did it take to actually make that thing? That's why I watch those movies alone, usually.
That's funny. You're one of those. Because my dad, when I watch stuff with him, he's a cop. So he would always be, oh, that gun doesn't have that many bullets in it. Oh, when it hit the person, the villain, it wouldn't do that on impact. I'm like, Dad, come on, we're in the middle of the movie. Yeah. Just go with it. Just run with it.
We are the worst people to watch a movie with because they're always poking holes.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. So here are some of the categories that we have charted out here. Ease of use. Sure. Complexity to make. You know, we're looking at Q again as sort of the product owner, product designer in this. Highest chance of self-inflicted insta-death. sexiness, of course, if we're talking about James Bond, some of this stuff is sexy. And then real world practicality and availability. So I would anticipate here, just, you know, looking at the compendium of Bond films at the beginning, fairly real world. And in the Daniel Craig era, especially at the beginning of that era and maybe the end, it's, you know, a little real worldy as well. In between, all bets are off. It's as cartoony as you want to go. We can dive into it.
Submarine lotuses and yeah, that kind of stuff.
Oh my God. It's on my list.
It's better than nanobots. It's better than nanobots.
So I have listed, okay, let's jump into it. I know we're going a little out of order here, but worst list, what I chatted down, what I added here is anything to do with nanobots is on the worst list.
Sure. I wholeheartedly agree. M's super death spray or whatever he called it. No time to die. Yeah.
So our listeners to our iPhone versus Android episode will know that Ethan has a very hot take that Time to Die is the worst James Bond film ever. I vehemently disagree with this, but I get where you're coming from.
Yeah, I mentioned this on that episode a little bit. I could talk all day about how much I don't like that movie. But it just, to me, like, people's motivations in that movie made no sense. Like, they whatever they needed to be in that particular moment or whatever the plot is, like, their personalities changed. And it just got to be, like, weird. I would take Die Another Day any day over No Time to Die.
I think that's
On this podcast, we call it No Time to Die. Yes.
No comma time to die.
I wonder if they actually changed out. I wonder if the nanobots was kind of like a replacement, because it would have been made much more sense if it was like a plague, but that was the wrong time to be talking about, like, pandemic.
Because even Rami Malek's like whole thing was he was like a chemical weapons, or like his family like made chemical weapons or whatnot, made viruses, and then all of a sudden it's nanobots. So it's like, it feels like that was like a late rewrite, because they're like, no pandemic, we can't talk about viruses. And it should have just been a virus, or just maybe just make that movie.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I totally agree with you there, but I don't think that's enough to make it the worst Bond film of all time. When there's a Never Say Never, is it Never Say Never Again out there?
Never Say Never Again. The unofficial Bond movie. Yeah.
It's also the worst in my opinion. But I would also think that The World Is Not Enough is a worse film. Pierce Brosnan.
Pierce Brosnan is definitely my least favorite Bond of all of them, and I would say that his movies were the lowest point I think in the series, and then it dipped again with No Time to Die.
Spectre is way worse than No Time to Die.
I mentioned the last time we were on, I rewatched it recently, and it's not as bad as I remember. It's a watchable film. It's not necessarily enjoying, but it's watchable.
I would say that the first act and a half is highly watchable, and then the back half of the film is unwatchable to me.
Yeah, it definitely falls apart. Yeah, it's that third act, and even when the Sony leaks came out many years ago,
right?
There was studio notes. Like, if you're a real nerd, you can go and you can take a look at them, and they're even saying like, "Oh, the third act is really weak," and for whatever reason, maybe they even did rewrite it. But that's the best that they could do.
Well,
and maybe because I'm just so partial to the game, I thought Brosnan's GoldenEye was. I rewatched that recently, and it's fun. It's got all the things like Russia, our man from the FBI coming in, and you know, there's all kinds of locations, and it's fun. It's fun.
I like 006 as your villain, Alex Trevelyan. Yeah. I think he's a good villain, good foil for Bond. I think that's positive. I think that's a fully inoffensive James Bond movie.
Yeah.
I think that one and then the follow-up, Tomorrow Never Dies, are both fine. I mean, not great, but fine. And then it goes way downhill after that.
I think GoldenEye is actually good. I think it's a good movie, and especially after Dalton's second and last film as well, which was basically just a long 18 episode that they decided to put on.
That's a great point, and I like Dalton's Bond, but I have to tell you that that's a worse movie. That's a worse Bond movie than Nobody.
Yes, that is. It's not even a Bond movie. It really,
that's the thing.
It's like a Miami Vice episode or an A-Team episode, and I think they were leaning very heavily into sort of the TV and the action movies at the time. And it's really you could put anybody in that movie, and it doesn't have to be James Bond, and it's the same movie, right? There's nothing Bondy about it.
It could have been Bruce Willis in that, or any mid 80s action star. It would have been the same.
Dolph Lundgren.
Well, yeah. I mean, Dolph Lundgren probably did make that movie a few times, you know?
Yeah, right.
Ethan, I have a few lists going with sort of my best, and interesting to talk about, worst, et cetera. Do you want to go first? Is there gadgets that you want to talk about specifically?
I have mine broken down into various categories. Like, I made a whole spreadsheet because, again, I could do this all day. So I'm happy to dive into whatever one you want to.
All right. Well, do you want to go into ease of use first?
Sure. Yeah. So I did mine in sort of like a top five. And I wanted to preface this is, so ease of use, a lot of the easiest ones to use are like boring. Right. Yeah. So it's like the bug sweeper in Live and Let Die, or the broom radio in License to Kill, or the exploding watch in Spectre. Like, those are easy to use, but I think they're boring, or the radio in Skyfall. Right. Yeah. So I broke mine down into things that are interesting and also easy to use. So here's my top five.
All right.
Number five, I should say, the milk bottle grenades from the Living Daylights. Yeah,
love
Necros,
movie, by the way.
who is also in Die Hard, too.
By the way, I thought that was Dolph Lundgren for many years.
No. It's not Dolph Lundgren. It's the guy from Die Hard who he fights, and then they write on a sweatshirt.
Right.
Number four is the personal air rebreather from Thunderball. So the little thing that he puts in his mouth. Again,
you mentioned
super,
this.
Super useful. Great
super,
thing.
Okay, so I've been sort of fantasizing about this particular device across many mediums for a long time. I love this thing, and I really wish that it existed. It doesn't appear just in the James Bond franchise, by the way. Star Wars is another notable one, and I think there's probably more. Batman?
Yeah.
Freaking love it, man. Freaking love it. It's simple. It's small.
It's great.
Very practical, and if it only existed, it would be perfect.
Yeah. They also gets a callback to... On Her Majesty's Secret Service, when he's going, the weird scene in the beginning where he's like kind of going through his desk and he's looking through the drawers and he sees the air rebreather in there.
Yeah. I love it.
Number three,
while we're on that topic, rebreathers are a thing. I guess are you guys saying it's just like a device he puts in his mouth? It's not like a full.
Yeah.
Because a rebreather is different than a scuba tank. It is an actual thing that you can get trained to use, and it.
Yeah,
it's very useful.
It's like a very small kind of like air canister that's like just kind of like fits in the mouth kind of thing. It just looks cool. Like, he pulls it out and then he puts it in his mouth and he jumps in the water. It's just like you look at that movie, is not great. Like, Thunderball is not a great movie.
No, it's not.
It's very boring. It's like there's like 40 minutes of it that you could cut out, but that right there, I think, like, makes that movie.
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
that would definitely
be cool.
If you could just take the oxygen out of the water and just breathe it, and that'd be cool.
Yeah, it also shows up in Die Another Day. So he uses the same device in Die Another Day. So shout out to that one. I'm so glad you mentioned it.
Number three, the face scanning phone that Daniel Craig uses in Quantum of Solace. So when he's in the opera and he's like pointing the phone at various people, like, the phone does an amazing thing for like whatever it was, like 2008 or 2009. You just point it and automatically recognizes the face and brings up all the information. Like, again, point and shoot, truly.
Yeah. And plausible, maybe not plausible in 2009,
right?
But plausible today.
Probably pretty plausible.
It was the precursor to Google Glass, or what
almost
became Google Glass.
That's right. Number two is the Felix lighter from Live and Let Die. So it's a little cigarette lighter that's actually in his car. That's actually like a radio transmitter. And he goes, the genuine Felix lighter. that's my more. And then number one is radioactive lint. From
radioactive
on Her Majesty's Secret Service. what could get simpler than just radioactive lint? Pull it out of your pocket and it kills someone. I do have an honorable mention, which is the avalanche ski jacket that Brosnan has.
I hate that movie, and I think that is I have that listed as well. The avalanche ski jacket is something that has real world practicality and use and need, right?
Yes.
So if this existed, many people could use it and take advantage of this. It would save lives, and not just for super spies.
But you would have to know that there's an avalanche coming. Like, you'd have to plan for it and then pull it to, like, save yourself.
I would counter that it should just be built into all ski jacket technology. You turn around, you see an avalanche behind you, you pull the cord, and boom, you're alive.
it's like a car airbag or something. It just automatically inflates and envelops you.
Yeah. I have a few things that I would add on to that list as well. In terms of, you know, this is dead simple stuff, but effective. Red Grant's Garrett watch, Garrote, is that how you say it? From
the wire
with love. So this is a simple watch. He pulls out a wire from it and he uses it to kill people, to strangle them. Simple, practical, effective. What I'm saying is, real world believable. We should all be wearing Garrote watches in case we ever need to strangle anyone.
Sure.
I love that one. From the same film, what's her name? I have it listed here. Let me find
Rosa
it.
Klebb.
Rosa Klebb and her dagger shoes.
Mm-hmm. I was going to put that one. Yeah.
Yeah. It honestly seems like a practical, implausible self-defense tool. Now, how she uses it in the film is impractical, right? Because she basically winds up in a fist fight where she's kicking. She's trying to, like, kick, which is really ineffective way to win a fist fight, even with a dagger on your shoe. But if it's unexpected and you're alone and you need something from self-defense, that's fairly practical. Not bad.
Yeah.
So I guess what I'm saying is that don't get in a fight with me because I'm going to have a fucking dagger in my shoe.
and a kill watch.
I guess I have a couple more that I could add on here in this, like, ease of use field as well. Living Daylights, the keychain. That's a really good one. Okay, so to rewind, The Living Daylights came out in, like, what, 1988, give or take. I'm probably
87. Yeah.
Sharper image was a thing back then. So for people who are our age, you will remember Sharper Image. And as a boy and a James Bond fan, to walk into Sharper Image, it's like Q's laboratory, right? So you can imagine this device actually being in Sharper Image, and it probably was. You would whistle and you could find your keys. That was the real world use. Now, as amplified through James Bond, if you whistled a certain tune, it'll spray knockout gas, which is great. Plausible, possible. Or if you wolf called, it would just explode. Love it. I'm so excited about this. Okay, that's all I got. I could go on for hours, but Ethan, back to you.
Well, I got one ease of use thing.
Yeah.
I was actually going to save it for, like, one of the best items, but I think it was Russia with Love, where they first introduced the briefcase. There's a knife inside. There's gold doubloons. I'm like, this is totally practical. You can make all this stuff. I was going to save it for one of the best items, but ease of use. It's like, yes, everything's there. It works. You can make it. I can make it tomorrow. But I think it also, like, set up everything that came after, like a thing that does something else, a watch that has a laser, a shoe that has a, like, hidden compartments.
As a kid, there's something about that is so compelling. Maybe it's a boy thing. I'm not really sure. We don't need to make this gendered, but I was so enraptured by this briefcase. Maybe it's because it was, like, sort of like a transformer. Like, there's some commonalities there. You know, it's one thing, but it does all this other stuff. The hidden knife, the 50 gold sovereigns that you could pull out, the explosion if you put in the wrong combination. My God, I freaking love this. It's my goat. I listed it as goat in my list here. Great one.
Yeah.
You want to go take us to the next category, Ethan?
Yeah, which we're doing. Which one's the next category?
I have complexity to make.
Complexity to make. All right. So this was the one that I think I recommended.
Yes.
So when I watch these movies, I have my product manager hat on. I just can't can't take it off. So I picked my top five, kind of like not necessarily complex to make, but kind of like Q had to really think about, like, what is going to go on in Bond's life that he's going to need this thing, or whoever is designing this particular object. So I got my top five.
Okay.
So my number five is the explosive eyeglasses in Pierce Brosnan's The World Is Not Enough. And I know it's a Brosnan movie, but again, think about how useful that is and what, you know, Q had to go through to kind of think about, like, okay, well, he's going to have to wear glasses and he's got to be in a situation where he's got glasses. And he's going to be in a situation where the glasses need to explode if he does this thing. So
yeah.
I thought that was, you know, that was a pretty complex, but then also a good anticipation by Q. Number four is the waterproof body bag from You Only Live Twice. So
when they
pretend that, spoiler alert for You Only Live Twice, where they make it seem like James Bond has been assassinated.
Right.
They put him in this very ornate scenario where they do an entire funeral for him.
I don't even understand what's going on here. And I've seen this movie more than most Bond movies.
But yeah. They put him in a waterproof body bag and actually drop him off of this boat because he's getting buried at sea. And then they have to like open it. It's like way too complex. But yeah, just think about like how complex that was just to kind of design it. Like the precise scenario, like, well, in case we have to fake James Bond's death, we're going to need a waterproof body bag because you know he's going to be buried at sea.
Just to add on how cool this device is. They dump this body bag. He gets a burial at sea, but then scuba divers come and take him into a submarine, which has M's office replicated.
They recreated his entire office inside.
Which is the best. Oh, yeah, man. He's wearing the full dress, you know, whatever his rank is, commander outfit. Yeah. And they take this blade and they cut through the wet canvas to the waterproof body bag. Very visceral. Very, very visceral. And
it's just so cool that they would do that. Yeah. But yeah, I also like in his funeral, he has no family members and none of his friends are there.
He's got like one friend, really, period.
much like Sean Connery's real life, according to Brad.
My number three is the spy briefcase. Again, I think there's almost nothing cooler than that. Like, again, it's got every single thing that James Bond could possibly need in there. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. Number two is the dagger shoe.
Yep.
We just talked about that. And my number one is the whistle activated keychain.
I love it.
My honorable mention is the dentonite toothpaste from License to Kill that Q creates. So, yeah. So all of these, I think, are like they're as you're talking about sort of user experience. Again, this is Q or whomever kind of going out of their way to think about like what's the scenario that this is going to be in? How do I design this? How do I deliver it? How do I make it? Right.
Right.
So it's a really interesting kind of angle, I thought.
Yeah.
I'd add on another one that's very contextual. So Q had to think about the context for when this would be needed, and he did design something that was effective for that. And that is the my favorite Bond car, which is the Living Daylights Aston Martin V8 Volante. It's my all-time favorite Bond car. It's the one that I would buy if I had the chance and the means tomorrow, right? So think about the context of how it was used and where it was used, right? So Q knew this and he designed a car around it. So I believe they were in Switzerland. They were somewhere near the Alps, something like that. So he outfitted this V8 Volante with retractable tire spikes for ice and snow. Skis. So there's a part in the film where Bond's tires get blown out. No problem. All he does is he presses a button and these retractable skis pop out of the side rails of the car, prop it up, and then he uses the rocket boosters to be able to drive on ice. So this is contextualized design to put in the lens of UX. This is for a very specific situation. This car would not have worked if Bond needed a car in the Bahamas, right? So I love this. Anyway, by the way, check out this car. If you guys don't know what I'm talking about, for our users and listeners out there, look up the Aston Martin V8 Volante from The Living Daylights. It is the sexiest, hottest car I've ever seen.
And he didn't have that car when he had the invisible car. Again, the worst possible car for that particular scenario. Like, if I'm going to have an invisible car, I'm going to be in a place that has snow all over the ground. They're going to see me coming a mile away. They're going to hear me coming. And there's going to be snow all over the top of the car.
Yeah. Such a terrible movie.
I recently watched that again too. And it's so bananas and it's so bad. It's almost like they were like, how bad can this be? It was like, it was like made on a dare. Like, what's the worst movie that we can possibly think of? And like, let's make that.
I thought it had a really promising opening, which is why it hit so much harder that it sucks, right? The opening specifically where he's kidnapped by, I think North Korea, and he's held captive for literally 8 months.
Yeah.
So he's caught he loses, which I freaking love when they start a Bond movie with a loss, right?
So
he's imprisoned, waterboarded, and tortured for 8 months until he finally escapes. Or he's actually not, he doesn't escape, he's in a prison transfer kind of thing. But then after that, there's any like nuance or pathos is just gone.
Yeah, it's Die Another Day, Dave, that we're talking about here.
Thank you.
And that opening is actually, again, it could be good. It's he looks like he's got like long hair. He's got a long beard. Yeah. What's cool about that is that they don't know if he ratted them out, like if he divulged secrets, and he doesn't even know. Like you can see him when M's talking with him in the beginning. Yeah. He doesn't even know if he actually like divulged secrets, because when they're doing this back and forth, and you can hear like kind of the hesitation and doubt in his voice. And then Brad, I agree with you. Like every scene after that just gets progressively dumber.
What a great premise. What a great setup for a Bond movie where they don't know if he's let out state secrets. That would be incredible. Yeah. That's what the movie was about.
And then the Madonna song happens.
am I wrong? But also in complexity to make, is this the one where he's skidding on his roof and he hits the ejector seat and flips the car right side up?
Yes.
And he's able to.
Goddamn right. You are.
That's. Let's just add ejector seats as complexity to make. I don't know if you guys saw the Mythbusters episode, but they tried everything to make this practically work. And there's just no way to actually make an effective ejector seat, especially not one that's going to flip your car right side up.
So also in this category, Ethan, I also have this sort of in my worst list. It's Little Nelly from You Only Live Twice.
Who is Little Nelly for our listeners?
Little Nelly, thank you, because I just kind of was assuming that we all knew what I was talking about here, which is a mistake that I often make. Little Nelly is a mini gyrocopter that comes in many giant crates.
Suitcases. It's more like they're kind of like these suitcases or whatnot with like travel stickers all over them.
Yeah. Right. It comes in like a series of 8 to 12 giant suitcases. It requires a team of people to assemble. I'm not really sure what problem this is solving. So this is also on my worst list, honorable mention worst list, but contextualized design, I'm not really.
So not
really
the Jetsons. Sure. It's not coming out of one suitcase. And
it is a baffling ordeal that Q has to go through to assemble this thing. And, all. And what I love about the crates or the suitcases is they have stickers on them. Like they've done this before. Like they've shipped this up like multiple times. Like, well, time to put another sticker on there and assemble Old Nelly.
Steamer truck with like worldwide. Also, you got to rely on like UPS to get like all 10 out of 10 packages there. You're like, God damn it, crate 8's not here. I don't have the wheels.
Oh, man. All right. We ready to move on to the next category?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. The next one I have listed is highest chance of self-inflicted insta-death.
This is a good one.
A lot of Bond gadgets are extremely dangerous, right? So, Ethan, do you want to start?
Sure. Yeah. Rather than listing off my top five, if you want to bounce back and forth, we can do that. But my number five is the ballpoint pen from GoldenEye. Q makes this pen that if you click it a certain number of times in a certain order, it will basically set a timer to explode. So you can imagine you're just sitting there, like you get this pen and you just like inadvertently click it and then you explode yourself. To me, it seems like it's almost inevitable that whoever has that pen is going to die. No question.
Because everybody clicks the top of a pen, like nervously in a meeting, you're talking about bad guy stuff. What's going to happen? Oh, click, 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 click. Oh.
And then just the preposterous scene where Alan Cumming in the movie, he's like, he gets a hold of the pen, the bad guy, and he's clicking the pen and Brosnan's sitting there and they have the camera on his face and he's counting. He's like doing this. He's like moving his lips and like counting. And then like, it's not only will it kill you, but it's a preposterous scene.
So user experience bad, but drama good. Yeah.
I don't know. That wasn't a very dramatic scene. I
don't know. It was filmed wrong, but I could imagine the tension, a little drop of sweat.
He was like gritting his teeth, his jaw was really tight. He's like, okay, now it's gonna explode.
Yeah. Right.
Awesome.
My number four is the Rolex Submariner that Roger Moore has in Live and Let Die.
Okay.
It has not only a very powerful electromagnet, but also a circular saw in it.
The circular saw, yes. I freaking love that.
I watched that this morning. What? Okay.
So I'm going to visualize here. So I'm wearing a watch. You know, our listeners can't see this, but if you had a circular saw on your watch and you bent your hand the wrong way, you're getting seriously injured.
Just kill yourself. There's, again, that watch is that has too many things in it. I also noticed, too, that the Moore era is a very watch gadget heavy era, like almost every single movie. I think part of that is because they had a partnership or a sponsorship with Seiko. So every single movie has like the Seiko
watch thing, which is across multiple films, is baffling to me. Like, I don't know how they aligned on this partnership with Seiko. There's nothing wrong with Seiko watch, especially Grand Seikos are pretty fancy schmancy stuff, but it's not a James Bond watch. So
they were new. I think it was new, and I think they were trying to do something different with the Roger Moore era too.
I think they should have went with swatches. I think that would have been better.
It was the 80s, so it was either Swatches or Seiko. Right.
Swatches did release a James Bond series of watches.
Really? The villain series. Yeah, the villain series.
While we're on watches and Seiko specifically, I did want to give honorable mention to the ticker tape watch from one of the Roger Moores. Let's see if I can find it real quick. It's from The Spy Who Loved Me. He's wearing a Seiko digital watch, and a little ticker tape comes out with a message from HQ, and it says 007 to report to HQ. Seems like the 007 is a little superfluous. You can shrunk and write that and just not have that. But
in case somebody else had the watch on, so they can go tell James Bond.
Exactly.
Like, I think this is for you.
From a UX perspective, what's interesting about it is it uses the same like ticker tape stuff that you can get at like Office Max.
Yeah.
So pretty practical, you know. Yeah. You get probably not a whole lot of like mileage out of like the length of the message.
No,
you
just walk into Staples. Message.
Yeah. Walk into Staples, you can refill it. It's fine. Sorry for that side.
I got one thing to add to the watches is because that was going to be my number one was the electromagnet watch. It's not specifically going to insta death you, but if you rely on it to deflect bullets, it's pretty much insta death. There's no magnet powerful enough to deflect a bullet in flight.
Sorry, you can go on.
I was going to say my number three is also a watch, and it's also from the Moore era, which is Moonraker. It has a wrist mounted dart gun. Okay. And so it's got two different kinds of darts in it. One will kill you and one will stun you. And somehow, so again, that's another thing that you just like, you squeeze your wrist wrong, you sneeze, you're absolutely going to shoot a dart into yourself and kill yourself. Yeah. My number two is the invisible car.
Not a good idea.
No, you will be killed if you're on the road. If you're driving down the road and you're in an invisible car, you will get hit. You will absolutely get hit. And then my number one is, which was my number one for effectiveness or usability, is the radioactive lint. You will die using it.
Well, slowly.
You will die slowly, but it will kill everyone who is in contact with that lint. Yes.
You are 100% getting cancer from using radioactive lint. For our users and listeners out there, I have to warn you, do not use radioactive lint as a homing device.
That's right.
Just don't do it. I know that you want to. I know that we all want to do it, but don't do it. Not worth it. All right. I have nothing to add to this category. Unless you do, Dave, we can move right on to sexiness.
That's where I always want to move, Brad.
I know you do. So we're going to talk about the sexiest Bond gadgets. Ethan, you want to go first?
I can, and I'll go slow on this because we're in the sexy category.
Go slow and speak like in a low,
real slow, Ethan,
in a low monotone voice. So the part of what I think is so appealing of Bond is just the suaveness of him. Like, it's cool, it's action, but I think a lot of it's like the trappings of Bond, right? It's just like he's so elegant, he's so suave. And I think that the gadgets, again, sometimes these are gadgets that are not even really gadgets or whatnot, but they just have like pervasive coolness to them, like a suaveness. So that's kind of where I picked mine. But my number five, it's not really a gadget, but it's just an ingenuity kind of thing, is in Dr. No, the first Connor movie, he puts a hair across his bedroom door to know whether or not someone actually comes through. So if
I
hair
do this
is
every night.
Every single night, Brad's sitting there with his long, glorious hair. taking out one strand and putting it across his door.
That's right.
But yeah, but like you see that and you're like, oh, that's the coolest thing ever, you know? And like, it's such a simple thing. And I guarantee you generations of kids were putting hairs across their doors to see if their parents came into the room.
Absolutely. So I have in this category a bulletproof suit, and I'm actually having a hard time finding a specific example from a specific film, although I would argue that Skyfall, he must be wearing, the opening of Skyfall, he must be wearing a bulletproof suit designed by Mr. Tom Ford.
He gets shot.
He gets shot
in Skyfall. Yeah. No, but he actually gets shot. That's the thing in Skyfall there is that he actually gets shot twice. So I don't think he's wearing a bulletproof suit. But
damn it.
when he falls off the train?
I was thinking, yes, that's what I'm talking about. But yes, it does permeate his skin. But you look at that rifle that Monty Penny is wielding as she shoots him. It should blow his arm off. So I think there's an argument that there's some protection in the suit, but you know, maybe not exactly.
It's just that he's that manly. The bullet just doesn't harm him.
Right. Tom Ford suits were going to be on my sexy list anyway. Brad, they actually do make suits with Kevlar. That's a real life thing. You could buy a suit with Kevlar like weaved in that gives some level of that's not even like a Bond dream. Like that's a real thing. If you have lots of money and you're
How do you know that? what scenario would you need to have that knowledge? I got a couple others here. I actually enjoy the Seiko wristwatch, and mostly because you can see just how tan Roger Moore is when he's wearing it. He's tan.
Go on.
His suit is tan. Everybody's wearing tan. It was a very tan era. So yes, he's got his tan arm, his tan thing. Yeah. The portable defibrillator that is in Casino Royale. That's still the best Bond movie and one of the best movies I would argue ever made. When Lachief poisons him and he's got to make it out to his Aston Martin and he's the defibrillator and it doesn't work and Vesper's got to help him. Like that scene is just awesome.
That's amazing. I have that also on my best of list and a couple of different categories. Number one, practicality. I do think that this is something that would be useful, not just for super spies, but defibrillators. Why not? It's practical. It's possible. Like it's highly possible that this could be implemented in a car.
We're on sexiness, That's what this is. On the Sucks podcast, we make defibrillators sexy.
We're bringing it back.
Okay, I've got another sexy one, and this is going a little R-rated here. Uh-oh. This is called a wet Nelly. Let me say it again. This is called wet.
You got a little Nelly and a wet Nelly.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. This is wet Nelly. Let me say it again. Can you put in some sexy sound effect there?
I'm not doing that.
Wet Nelly. Okay, what wet Nelly is, this is the Lotus Esprit submarine from the Spy Who Dumped Me. So it's a counterpart to the little Nelly, the helicopter. This is an underwater Lotus Esprit. It's white. It's beautiful. It's highly like early 80s, late 70s, but in like this sort of... Halston Gucci kind of like aesthetic, just so of the era, but it's held up so well. I love it.
Just imagine it being like velvet on the inside of it, you know. Totally.
Yeah, what's that George Michael song, Careless Whisper? I just picture that playing inside of that car at all times.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not ringing a bell, Brad. Can you sing it?
Oh god, but I don't know the words.
Yeah, that's it. I get it. I was just kidding.
I'm not ashamed.
Just want to hear you sing.
I also listed here too.
Sorry. Go ahead. Anything
in Skyfall. Basically, any gadget in Skyfall is cool. That's such a cool, you know, sexy movie. He looks great. The movie's shot amazing. The cars, the suits, the guns, even the radio that he kind of pulls out. Like even that kind of lame thing. Is just makes it look cool.
Of course, we know that Bond doesn't pull out, but that's the only.
It is my favorite film for sure.
Yeah, it's close, but it's not. It's not my favorite Bond film. But do you think that's the sexiest Bond movie overall?
I think so. I mean, I would put it that I think Craig is the sexiest Bond. that we've had thus sure. far. And he's shirtless through half of the movie. He's exercising. You know, he's got Tom Ford suits that are skin tight on. It looks like he's wearing a wetsuit with
those
a tie.
Suits are incredible.
So yeah, I would say probably Skyfall is maybe the sexiest movie.
I would think that Casino Royale might be sexier because it actually has like a sexy relationship.
Yeah.
You know, that the scene where they're in the shower and she's traumatized and
yeah,
I mean, that's some sexy stuff, man.
Yeah. Spectre is not sexy and neither is No Time to Die at all. I think it's like decidedly unsexy. Time to Die. But those first three movies there as a trilogy are pretty sexy films.
Yeah. 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 For sure.
Can we get back to defibrillators? I'm just,
jeez.
I don't know. You guys are talking about real sexy stuff. I don't know. It's not my thing.
I think defibrillators actually goes back to complexity to make. So I wanted to make this point.
Yeah.
There was something great about Q's prescience to be able to like predict whatever you needed on this specific mission.
Right.
Can we say that a defibrillator in a car was like, how did you predict that was going to be needed? But probably good to have on all cars. Why not have it in the roadside emergency kit or everything?
I would think for a special agent, he should have had that from the day one. Connery, it's like a first aid kit, you know, in a suitcase in the back with all the things.
Well, to dig into it, I'm not really sure about the defibrillator specifically for James Bond. And even in this use case, like he was poisoned. What does that have to do with, like, I guess it was poison that was going to stop his heart, but it's a bit of a
stretch. He was having a heart attack, I think. I think that was what they were kind of
Right.
The people on the radio that he's talking with, basically they're saying his heart's stopping, or he's going to have a heart attack. And so the idea was that he would put it on. And then,
But
he's like, his shirt's open. He's got his chest out. He's got the defibrillator on. Yeah.
I get it. I'm just saying, like, in terms of contextualized design, like, how much of a use case is this that Bond is having heart attacks?
Like, right. Yeah.
You know, this is a very specific poison that stops his heart, I guess. Like, anti-poison kits, sure. But like James Bond is a pretty healthy dude. He's not going to like naturally have heart attacks often.
it's very, very specific, right? But I think that's also what makes it kind of cool. If he had been shot or something like that, it wouldn't have helped at all. But that one specific scenario is pretty
highly
useful.
Specific. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, and then the last category that we have before we get into some of the bonus stuff is real world practicality and availability. I feel like we might have covered this in our first category and ease of use a little bit, but Ethan, do you have anything to add here?
Oh yeah, I got a whole list. But I'll go. So the poison pen from Moonraker that Roger Moore has, totally real, totally practical, right? Pen full of poison. I think that you know, that works. The sharper image lockpick kit. View to a kill.
Yep.
He's got a sharper image credit card that he has, and then
does
inside
really?
The card it does. Yeah, the whole thing is that it's a
oh my
it's
God.
Like a sharper image credit card, and it like he opens it up and it's a lockpick kit. It's
I didn't know sharper image had a credit card. That seems like blatant product placement. Like
in a Bond movie, product placement.
No. Yeah,
sounds so 80s. Just a.
Lockpick kits are real. I don't know about the Sharper Image credit card lockpick kit, but
well, if Sharper Image did not produce that and then sell it and market it within their stores, that huge mess.
they probably did. I got the EMP watch from No Time to Die. Again, I don't like the movie, but again, practical, right? Okay, watch that gives out an electromagnetic pulse. If he was in any kind of vehicle or whatever, the vehicle would stop, he would die.
An EMP and a watch.
Yeah, like, EMP and a watch.
What is that movie, Ocean's 11, 12, 13, 14, where they, it's like a huge suitcase.
It's like the size of Don Cheadle has it. It's not even a suitcase. It's like an entire van.
Right. So, are you saying it's actually practical, or it would be practical if they could make it?
I think a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B.
Okay, got it.
Let's differentiate between practicality and viability.
Very practical, probably not viable. My number two is the fake crocodile.
So glad
Octopussy.
You have this.
Yeah. Again. There are crocodiles in the world. They're real. You can make a fake crocodile. Yeah. You can tell where I went with my list here. I did mostly goofy.
Why did he have the crocodile? What was this fake crocodile? Refresh my memory.
So he could go and he could infiltrate the enemy compound incognito.
Oh, was it like a Trojan horse thing? Yeah. He was in the crocodile.
He was in the crocodile.
And of course, this is the only solution to that problem, right?
Of course.
There is no other scenario.
There's no other way other than getting,
Did Crocodile Dundee steal this from him, or did he steal from Crocodile Dundee is really the question.
Did that happen in Crocodile Dundee?
I don't think.
Yeah, he walked into the crocodile bar wearing the crocodile suit.
I don't think that Crocodile Dundee was trying to fool people into thinking that he was a crocodile, though.
Oh, what movie did you see?
It was the very first one. He walks into Walkabout Creek and like he's like frightens everybody. He's like, oh, no, it's just me in a crocodile suit.
Okay, I take it back. I guess that is exactly what he tried to do. That sounds like the dumbest shit I've ever heard.
You guys are going to watch it tonight, trust me.
I am absolutely not watching it tonight. At least that scene.
What I was going to say is that Bond pulls the same trick that he did with the crocodile, but with a seagull.
He's got a seagull on his head.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Connery's under the water. He's like got a scuba gear on, and he's got a seagull on his head. not a real one. Like one, he just has it on his head as if I'm gonna sneak in. They're never gonna see me if I'm wearing a seagull on my head. And so he comes out of the water and there's a seagull on top of his head.
This is Sir Sean Connery. Let's keep this in mind. This is Sir Sean Connery with a seagull on his head.
I can't imagine why he wanted to quit the series. They wanted to find the most humiliating, emasculating things they could find.
Also, just the idea that a perfectly still bird floating around on the water is less obvious than just not having a bird at all. Just don't have it.
Right.
Scuba diving.
Why have something in your head that is guaranteed to draw attention to you? Why not just go under the water?
Oh my god! Right. I just got the
or nothing at all.
The animation idea for this episode. If we do an animated, it's just going to be you're gonna put birds all over the water, and then one of us is going to pop up.
I love it. Speaking of sexiness, though, to go back to a previous category. He gets out of the water. He's wearing the wetsuit. He takes off the seagull mask. Right. Mm-hmm. So he's still wearing the wetsuit. He takes off the wetsuit and or he reverses it. Ethan, maybe you can correct my memory here, but doesn't it transform into a tuxedo somehow?
Yeah, like perfectly. He's got a tuxedo on underneath it. Yeah,
it's just underneath. He just unzips it. He's perfectly. Yeah, he's in a dry suit. Unzips it. Yeah. He's perfectly coiffed.
Now does perfectly. He put the cufflinks everything? Does he put the seagull back on his head?
What would be so great is if he forgot that the seagull was on his head. So he takes off the wetsuit. He's impeccably dressed in the white tux with the red carnation. And then he walks into the casino and he's got a seagull.
He turns
the
seagull inside out. Top hat.
Oh, my God. So great. I have to go back and rewatch all these movies now. I only rewatched a couple of them in preparation.
You forget how goofy like a lot of the Connery ones are, which is, I think, where it's weird that you get backlash on Moore's. Moore's were definitely goofy. I mean, they were definitely the goofiest ones, but like, especially like Diamonds Are Forever, which is Connery's last one, is awful. That's a bananas movie. That's a bananas movie. And it's awful terrible. Film. It's a terrible, terrible film. Yeah. It's a piece of shit, but it's a wonderful piece of shit. And then I also had
it's got like gold flakes in the piece of shit. It's
diamonds,
of course. Diamonds. Oh my god, missed it.
And then I had Odd Jobs hat again. I think it's practical. It would be available. It's just it's a bolo hat that has a razor blade on it.
I gotta disagree with you on this. This is garbage.
It's a Peaky Blinder.
Practical.
Is that what it is?
It's gonna like. There's no chance that it would actually be able to decapitate a statue or a person, no matter how hard you throw the hat.
No. But it would definitely hurt something.
It would be like, "Ow! Why did you throw your hat at me? Am I bleeding? I'm slightly bleeding. How dare you?
You have to throw the hat. It doesn't just shoot things out of it.
No.
It's like a frisbee with a blade in it.
That seems that
apparently could chop off the hat off marble. And then he throws it, and it's supposed to decapitate people. Yep. Yeah, yep. And he throws it at the statue, and you can actually like see the prop guy pulling the string for the statue's head to come off.
It's wonderful. It's wonderful. All right, let's get into some bonus categories. The worst gadget UX in Bond films. So the worst of the worst. I'll get us started here, and I'm going to probably steal some thunder from you, Ethan. I'm sorry about this. Okay, this is the shark gun from Live and Let Die. This is the worst shit in any Bond movie, maybe ever.
Tell us.
So I have to set this up. So let me refer to my notes here, so I don't get this wrong. Okay, the shark gun. What this does is it shoots compressed gas pellets. That is its purpose, right? So I actually don't recall
pellets.
Gas.
Did you say the shark gun or the shart gun?
Oh God.
Boo.
It's compressed gas pellets. Why it was initially designed, maybe you can remind me, Ethan. I don't remember what its actual purpose was for, but here's how it was actually used in the film. The end of the film, the villain is shot by the shark gun with a gas pellet, which causes him to inflate like a balloon filled with helium.
No.
Not only does he inflate like a balloon, he then floats up to the ceiling.
No.
Okay. This is a true thing. Look at this.
Willy Wonka? Is it or Harry Potter? What are you talking about?
Incredible.
I fail to see a problem with this.
So he inflates like a balloon with helium somehow, floats up to the ceiling somehow, and then explodes.
Yeah.
Viable. Viable.
Totally real.
Okay.
Yeah, the shark thing is actually real. That's how you kill sharks. I don't know the mechanics of it, but I think it's maybe because bullets don't work underwater or something like that. But when you're gonna go kill a shark, again, as we all do, you take this thing and it like injects them with like air. It does not cause them to
and then they inflate with helium and float up into
exactly.
the sky.
Shark balloon coming out of the water. Yeah.
Oh, so that explains all the shark shaped balloons that I see in the ocean. Of course. All right, I stand corrected. That's an awesome one. You guys have anything?
I would maybe go with ice spikes on the tire. Great idea, but how are you going to get spikes to come out of an air inflated tire? I don't know how that works. Again, we go back to Die Another Day. I don't know. Maybe a little. I don't know. Just seems
okay.
And he doesn't even use them. He doesn't even use them really in that movie. He uses them to like drive up a wall instead of like driving through the snow.
Right.
Okay. Totally. There you go. Then that's the word.
I also have anything with nanobots, which we've already covered, so we don't need to go into it too much. But anything with nanobots sucks. Mm. I have the this is controversial, and I'm sorry, guys. The jetpack from Thunderball. I love jetpacks. I love the concept of jetpacks. Mm-hmm. But as shown in this James Bond movie, it's terrible UX, and it is completely impractical and just kind of bullshit. You know,
but it's a real thing. They actually,
right. It's a real person actually doing a real.
It's a real person doing a real thing with a real thing. And if you see, they have he's like wearing a helmet and all that kind of stuff. Like it looks incredibly dangerous. Like I can imagine. Like again, talk about like instant kill.
I suppose you're right. Like that's a great insta kill category. It's also so goofy that he puts on a helmet. James Bond puts on a helmet. Now, to all of our jetpack riding, you know, fans out there, please wear your helmets. But for James Bond, it's a different thing. And of course, he had to put on the helmet, to your point, Ethan, because it was a real stunt. And of course, it was an army, you know, a person from the army who was using actual army tech. Of course, you're going to wear a helmet if you're performing that stunt. So that's why Connery wears the helmet. It's just goofy and stupid. I can keep going. You guys have anything? Invisible car. Absolutely.
Yeah. Again, I know this has been talked about to death, but it's such a dumb thing. And again, even just that he's using it in the snow, it's not like he's using it like on a sunny day or like, you know, he's using it in a scenario that is guaranteed to get caught. And even that scene where he's sneaking up on, right, he's driving through the snow and you can see the tire tracks, you can hear the snow crunch, is the least stealthy vehicle in the, it draws more attention. It makes it more obvious.
I think their mistake with the invisible car, another mistake, is that they made it too invisible. it was too invisible. Like the part where Q is showing Bond the car in, I think it's an underground, it's in Q's lab. It's not there. It's not that it's an invisible car. It's using some sort of like, you know, refractor light tech. You know, it's just not there. And it's like almost real technology. If they used sort of more real world technology to illustrate this, maybe
John Cleese, who is the worst Q, we could do a whole episode on bad casting, but he walks around the car and like he gets warped because they're trying to show you that, like, you know, it's like kind of like warping light and whatnot. Yeah. It's just dumb. That movie, though, just as an aside, because it was the 20th film, if you watch closely as they're going through the lab, you can see all of the different gadgets. So they have 20 years worth of gadgets, like including like the jetpack and whatnot behind.
Little Nelly's in there.
Yeah, you can see Little Nelly there. Uh-huh. I don't remember if you can see the crocodile. I don't know if you had the crocodile thing. So. Probably do. I have to watch that movie again.
Anytime they pull that shit, I am such a fan of it. They did it in, you referenced it earlier, Honor Majesty's Secret Service, where he's going through his office and there's all the props from the Sean Connery films.
Yeah.
And they play the music cues from each specific film. I'm such a fanboy for that shit.
But you like that? That was so that like audiences would get that he's that guy. Yeah. Like the whole thing was like, I know he looks different, but he's the same guy. So we're going to show you all the stuff and play the music. It's him, right?
I do. It's stupid and I love it.
Something maybe we need to cover is Bond a title or a name? Because I know Skyfall kind of screwed up that.
The name. It's a name. This has been talked about a lot too, but yeah, the gravestone with his parents' names on it, unless they retroactively went back and like re-chiseled the tombstone to be like, that's
offensive. But yeah. Unfortunately, I think that they definitively answered that question. It's not the answer that I would have chosen, but I believe that
they can always change it. They do like a reboot or whatnot, but
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, maybe this is a good segue for the next film. Maybe what if they actually, you know, treated the Craig films in continuity moving forward?
Well, Lashana Lynch is, I mean, again, spoiler alert for the latest movie, which no one should see, but she is 007. And I think me, it seems like, she actually takes the mantle of 007 because he retires. And so she becomes 007. And so I think that's a really interesting thing where they make, they do a movie with her and she's just her, but she's 007, right? Yeah. I think that's a really cool way to kind of continue the series rather than having there be like yet another James Bond. I mean, I'm sure they'll do that. But
I think they did say James Bond will be back, right? Not 007 will be back. What did it say at the end? It said something. I remember seeing
honestly, it might have said 007.
This is an interesting point, guys. We need to know the answer to this.
Also, they roll back her being 007 in Acts 2.5 of the movie, where
I know, which is lame. Which is lame. They should use that.
Anyhow, the other thing that I have to add here for just inexplicably offable is Scaramanga's flying car, which is an AMC Matador, which even in like 1974 standards is probably the lamest car that you could possibly pick. It is so bizarre. An AMC Matador, if anyone's curious to see what a stupid ass car looks like from 1974, look it up.
Well, that was the product placement. Look
up pretty much any AMC car. I mean, they made the Gremlin. They made the... Of course.
There's and You Only Live Twice. The racist Southern sheriff shows up again because he was hilarious in his first go around, and he's shopping for an AMC car in Japan. Like he's just on vacation, and then they go there. He is, and he's just shopping for an AMC car in Japan because they.
By the way, I need to go out. I need to go off on a diatribe because I feel like people don't talk about this enough. That character actor appeared in many films.
Yes,
not just the Bond films. As that character, Southern Sheriff, notably Superman 2,
right? Yeah,
Superman 2 and Superman 3. So same guy? So strange. Same guy.
Yeah, same guy.
That's weird.
Doing the same shtick. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, was he just such a cool guy that, you know, Hollywood just had to have him around?
My understanding is that people thought he was hilarious. Okay.
People in 1970 something, they had never seen anything as hilarious as this redneck Southern sheriff.
Yeah.
Fucking love it. Incredible. All right. Anything else to add for the worst of the worst of the worst? Anyone? All right, let's keep it moving. We're almost done, almost to the finish line. Let's talk about the best Bond films for gadgets. Joseph, you have something. You want to go first?
Yeah. Well, I've already talked about the suitcase, so I'll go past with Russia from Russia with Love. I think Goldfinger, the DB5, practical, viable, smokescreen, oil slicks, machine guns. Other than the ejector thing seat that I talked about earlier, it's a sexy car. It's beautiful, and it kind of like the suitcase. It kind of set the basis for like everything that would come later, like things hidden in things that are viable, usable, practical.
I mean, so your angle here is that introducing that car in that film sets up gadgets for Bond, you know, the Bond franchise moving forward. That makes sense.
Yeah. Plus, it's a great car. I mean, come on, it's the DB5.
It's not my favorite, but it is a great car. I wouldn't turn it down.
Those three Connery movies, like Goldfinger, Thunderball, You Only Live Twice. Like Goldfinger did really kind of like set the template, right? Like you watch Goldfinger and that's basically the same-ish movie that they kept making for the next like, you know, 50 years. But those three movies are super gadget heavy and they're probably, I think, three of the best for just overall gadgets. There's practical stuff, there's fun stuff in there, right? Yeah. The villains are using cool gadgets, right? Like the guys that he's working with are using cool gadgets. Like that was just a really gadget heavy time.
Yeah.
But fun.
Totally. Yeah. Totally. Now, I don't prefer those. Like, my favorite Connery is from Russia with Love, which has a little bit more of like the stripped down gadgets, but totally get it. You know, and I'm not mad at, you know, those three films for making a gadget heavy that would extend all the way through till Daniel Craig.
How about the modern era, which is the best Bond film for gadgets out of the Craig series? What would you say, Ethan? Put you on the spot.
Well, the most kind of gadgety, it depends on what you mean by gadgets, but it's probably going to be Skyfall, I think. I think for like gadgety, because Quantum Solace has a lot of gadgets in it. Like it has like the smart table and it has like the, you know, the face recognition, all that kind of stuff. That they went very kind of like technology heavy there. But I think Skyfall it's such a stripped down movie on purpose. Yep. And I think the gadgets that he uses there, they're simpler. There's far less of them. Like Skyfall is not a really gadget heavy movie, but those gadgets that he does use are very cool. Yeah. And even in the shootout scene in his family ancestral home, he's improvising kind of, defense mechanisms and whatnot. Like all those are gadgets. It's just a very, very kind of cool hands-on gadgety movie.
Yeah. I call that the Home Alone scene where they set up the
Home Alone
exploding scoreboard and the exploding light bulbs and, yeah, that's actually really great. That's worth talking about. That's actually really great.
I noticed too that scene, that piece there. If you've ever seen the first Nightmare on Elm Street movie, like this is a real deep cut. Yeah. But Nancy, the protagonist of that movie, does the same thing. She's literally making like this the same kind of like light bulbs with nails in it that explode and whatnot. It's like the same thing.
Great, so cool.
Who came first, Home Alone or Nightmare on Elm Street?
Nightmare on Elm Street. Yeah, I don't know that Kevin McAllister in Home Alone is making nail bombs.
I think his are actually more deadly.
Yeah, pretty close.
Like lighting people on fire.
Yes,
which is something breaking
your face
happens.
With a swinging paint can. It was pretty. It was a house of horrors.
Yeah, yeah.
House of horrors.
All right, this has been fun. We're gonna keep it moving. We're wrapping up shop here. Let's move on to sucks or doesn't sucks. Hit the theme.
Sucks. Not sucks.
All right, this is a special Bond-focused edition of Sucks or Doesn't Sucks. I have picked three items here, which we will go round robin and determine whether or not they sucks or don't sucks. Number one, A View to a Kill, starting with, just broad, controversial movie choice. A View to a Kill. Ethan, you're a guest. You want to go first?
I think it's one of the best movies ever made.
Yeah.
I think you should watch it several times in a row. Get your friends and family together. Watch
sure.
it. It does not suck at all. I think one of the problems with that movie is that people get lost in the horses part of it, which unfortunately is the first 45 minutes of the film.
Fair.
But if you get through that, it gets to be pretty great.
It's not a gadget, but when he is put into his Rolls Royce and driven into the water, he escapes the car by breathing the air from the tire. Not necessarily a gadget, but still something cool. I really like that part. All right. A View to a Kill. Joe, have you seen this film and does it sucks or does it not sucks?
I have not seen it, so I'm going to step out of this one and probably round two. But you know what? Maybe that's what I'll be watching tonight.
Congratulations. Your Sunday night is now
Crocodile Dundee. For you. Yes.
And while we're there, guys, I'm going to take a pass on all this. Regarding Henry, man, I don't remember this. Was it the one with the tall lady with the...
Grace Jones.
Grace Jones, Mayday.
Yeah, I remember that. I don't remember the movie. Something about the statue. No, the Golden Gate Bridge.
Okay.
Well, Golden Gate Bridge is in it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool.
Okay. Movie. So, for anybody who isn't intimately familiar with this movie, it doesn't suck at all. Doesn't Christopher suck. Walken is your villain. Come on.
Yeah.
Grace Jones,
right
at
there,
the height of
suck.
Her powers and the height of her hair.
Yes, the hair.
Come on, man. I mean, she is such a foil. She's such a match for Roger Moore. And in fact, it's not even a match. It's like, how in the world are you going to believe that Roger Moore survives a fight with her.
Oh, she would kill him. She's the best henchman. She's always my number one henchman. That movie also begins with a disclaimer.
Yeah.
This is so apparently they chose the name of the villain and they didn't check that there was a real company or a real guy that had the same name. So instead of changing his name, they just put a disclaimer in the front of the go. This doesn't pertain to at all. Please don't sue us. Nothing you're about to see here is about this real guy. And then you just that's how you start.
Totally
and it gets
wild.
Weirder and weirder from there.
Talking about gadgets, View to a Kill also invented the snowboard.
What? No. Yeah.
I think it popularized.
Sounds about the right time.
Okay, popularized the snowboard.
Okay.
James Bond is blown off of his ski. There's like a snowmobile thing. It gets blown up too, and the rail from the snowmobile becomes the first snowboard popularized in film. Period.
Yeah, he like it blows up, and he kind of looks at it, and he's like, "Huh?
I wonder if I could invent a popular sport at this moment.
I bet I could ride on that." And then, sure enough, he does. And then he's, yeah.
So Marty McFly invented the skateboard. Yep. And James Bond invented the snowboard. Got it.
Right. And then just to tell you what a wacky bananas movie this is, he gets on the snowboard and then a non-sanctioned, non-Beach Boys version of California Girls starts on the soundtrack.
Stop.
Yeah.
And they couldn't even get the Beach Boys version of it, which is like bananas.
And then he surfs down. Again, I think that was one of those things going like, it's like surfing, so we're going to play a surf song, so you get it.
Right. Really holding our hands with that one. All right, number two. I guess I need to contextualize this. The item is George Lazenby. George Lazenby is the second James Bond who appeared in only one Bond film on Her Majesty's Secret Service. Ethan, does George Lazenby as Bond suck or not sucks?
If I have to go binary, I would say he doesn't suck. He doesn't suck, but he was the wrong person to choose, I think. It was a real kind of left turn.
Yeah.
And then clearly, you know, he didn't want to do it anymore, so he left. But yeah, I would say he doesn't suck. But I would have chosen probably any number of other people to be the second Bond. Yeah.
Joe, Dave, do you guys have an opinion on George Lazenby?
Nope.
Not really. No.
Okay. Well, sorry. It might surprise you to know that I do. I think that he's a perfectly okay James Bond. He's done some real disservice from the script and from the filmmaking. They put him in a kilt with a really ineffective accent where he's going undercover for a good, it feels like 30 minutes of the movie. It's a very long movie, a very great movie, but very long. And he is doing this effete accent while wearing a kilt and a giant cravat thing. It's the most unfortunate wardrobe choice in any Bond movie.
And his name is Sir Hilary Bray. That's his undercover. That's his undercover name.
You know what that outfit was missing, guys?
What's that?
A seagull top hat. I think.
Honestly, it wouldn't have been that out of place with what he was.
Would not have been out of place in that movie. That's also another bananas movie. That movie has kind of like. Yeah. It's one of the more grounded movies. Like you get, it's a very kind of like half of the movie's really, really grounded and kind of practical and kind of just, straightforward kind of spy stuff. And then the other half of the movie has him in a kilt and Telly Savalas programming assassins who have food allergies. Yeah. Like it's just
a lot of the movie.
These are just right. I didn't make that up. These are two polar opposites within the same film.
That's incredible. Hilarious. It's also the only example in a Bond film that Bond looks directly at the camera and speaks to the audience.
Yeah.
This is something that literally happens in the movie. Okay. It's in the intro stinger. Something happens. Yada yada. Some girl. Yada yada. He turns to the camera and says, "This would have never happened to the other fellow."
Yeah.
Referring to Sean Connery.
It was very self. I agree that the script didn't do him any favors, were so tied to the Connery. Again, even just the opening scene of him going through the desk and playing the music and having it say like, this didn't happen to the other guy. Like the whole first 30 minutes of that movie is just going like, it's the same guy. We promise.
Don't worry. Does he turn to the camera and say, "The Aston Martin DB5, it is so choice. If you have the means, I highly recommend picking one up."
Again, it wouldn't have been that out of place in this film. It's a bananas movie, but one of the best. It has probably one of the greatest endings for any James Bond movie.
Which streaming service has Bond on it? Because I kind of want to go, I want to watch this now.
Well, what I did, Joe did, is the same thing. Every once in a while, Vudu will put these whole catalogs of films on sale. Mm. So I got like the 4K version of every Bond film. I purchased through Vudu for like $60 and it was like, I don't know, however many, was it 27 movies or something?
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty great deal. So
it was all of them up until No Time to Die, but it was more like $100, but still, 25 films for $100-$150 was steal, really. I mean,
so as I'm sure we all know, Amazon purchased MGM and the Bond catalog. So we should anticipate that at some point in the near future that all the Bonds will be streaming on there.
Amazon, nice.
Yeah.
Great. And then finally, this is a trick question. I have to preface this. Okay. In the film, You Never Live Twice.
You only live twice. You only live
sorry. Sorry. In the film, You Only Live Twice. Sean Connery in Yellowface. So he goes undercover in a Japanese village as a 6'4" Japanese man at full awful yellow face. So does this sucks or does this not sucks? Now, this is a trick question. And if you fail this question, this is the last episode ever of this podcast. Ethan, I'll end with you. Dave, why don't you go first?
Oh, but you want me to go first? Okay.
Yes. Watch yourself, counselor.
Yes, but maybe.
No.
I'm not going to do that. No, of course it sucks. I don't even remember. Why is he? Why would they do that? Like,
why would they do that?
I mean, he's not going to look Japanese if he just paints his face. Like, that's ridiculous.
And he doesn't. He looks, he's hunched over and he's towering over the rest of the people there. And his makeup looks terrible. He made himself more conspicuous.
Why did they do this?
Should have pulled in an invisible car and got out.
Yeah, it's like up with Mickey Rooney in Breakfast at Tiffany's is one of the most offensive portrayals of Japanese culture on film ever.
Oh, that Mickey Rooney was bad.
Yeah. Okay, so Joe, I need you to go on record here. Does this sucks or not sucks?
Of course it sucks. Okay, I mean, thank you. Let's face it. Times have changed. We know what's wrong and it's wrong.
Oh, so it's always been right back then, now. Is that what you're saying?
Well, no, it should have always been wrong, but we've, come around to acknowledging and learning and growing. And
I hope so. Ethan?
It sucks. It's not just, and that movie is just the over racism, but then it's really misogynistic as well. Oh, yeah. Like there's
James Bond?
We've
avoided talking about that the whole time. We can get into that. Going back to the sexiness category,
the producers are like, if you thought he was misogynistic before, wait till you see this.
Hold my martini.
Yeah, it's like it is. Like, hold my martini, hold my beer. But yeah, he's got these two women, these two Japanese women that he's kind of like, leading on, and he's like, calling her ugly and stuff like that. It's like, it's a very, very uncomfortable film.
Yeah.
I know it's like a lot of people like that movie quite a bit.
I do.
I think the movie itself is good. The Blofeld in that is bananas.
The Donald Pleasance.
The very British version of that. It sucks. I wish they would just edit that out, quite frankly, but
yeah. All right, very good. I think we passed the test, but I'm sure our users will let us know on the socials how badly we fucked that one up. But yeah, it totally sucks. That is our episode today. Ethan, is there anything that you would like to plug?
Download Discovery Plus, and now download the world of Warner Brothers Discovery stuff. So HBO Max, CNN, anything and everything for Warner Brothers Discovery.
Right on. Nice. Right on. Gentlemen, anything else that you would like to plug? Joe? Dave, anything that you want to plug today?
No, I'm good for now.
Okay, very good. I'll plug the Morgan Wixon Theater in Santa Monica. My daughter has a show that she's in today. That's where my next stop is. Wonderful theater, and it's a really great youth program. So I just wanted to give that a shout out because that's my next stop. Nice. And that is our episode. Thank you for listening to the Sucks Podcast. We are wishing you health, a well-designed life, and good experiences. Da da ba da da ba